This is the city. Date, Wednesday, July 6th. It's hot in Los Angeles. Traffic snakes along the freeway. But it'll be more congested next week when the Democratic National Convention comes to town. My name's Nichols, Lee Nichols. I work here. I'm a reporter, NBC.
This is another of NBC's special reports aimed at complete coverage of the breaking news. Today, convention preview, a look at the activities leading up to the opening of the Democratic National Convention. Now, reporting from Los Angeles, here is NBC News correspondent Edwin Newman.
The predictable happened here in Los Angeles today. An open struggle began over the civil rights plank in the Democratic platform. That's a fight that takes place every 4 years. The Northerners and liberals pushing for a plank they think will win votes for them. The Southerners, for one, they say will not lose votes for them. We'll have a direct report on the platform committee in a moment. One other important development, Governor Leroy Collins of Florida, permanent convention chairman, made it clear that he will allow vote switches on the first ballot unless the Rules Committee orders him not to. The Rules Committee is not expected to do that, and if it doesn't, Senator Kennedy should be the beneficiary. Kennedy is hoping for vote switches on early ballots that will put him across the line. There are reports today, for example, that he will get the big California delegation on the first or second ballot if the Californians see that their votes are enough to give Kennedy the nomination. Supporters of Senator Johnson claim to be undismayed by this sort of talk. Their spokesman, John Connolly, said he thought Kennedy was losing strength and was now effectively stopped. The platform committee is about ready to start its second day of deliberations. For a direct report on that, we switch to the Biltmore Ballroom and NBC's Frank Burkholzer.
Well, in a short time, this second day of meetings of this very large platform committee will get underway. As you perhaps can see, the spectators and some of the witnesses who will appear today are already beginning to gather. There's some hope that the man designated as chairman of this committee will turn up in time for the session today. That would be Representative Chester Bowles of Connecticut. He missed his committee's opening session yesterday. This is not as bad as it might sound, since the Democratic platform is really written in behind the scenes by special drafting committees, not by this large and cumbersome group which meets here and holds these public hearings, which will go on all this week. In fact, we have a loud protest on this score today from Senator Sam Ervin of North Carolina, whose seat will be up here in the corner when the committee meeting begins in a short time. Senator Ervin says the backstagers are keeping the South out in the cold in the writing of the civil rights plank. The senator from North Carolina recalls that in 1956, a committee of Southern and Northern representatives was formed so that both sides could work together in framing the civil rights plank of that last convention. This time, he says, the Southerners are out in the cold. From all we've heard on this score, this seems to be the case. In fact, NBC has been told that there's a feeling by the Northern liberal group, which is in charge of drafting this civil rights plank, a feeling that the Southerners will be kept in line so long as Lyndon B. Johnson remains an active candidate. Therefore, a strong civil rights plank can be handled because Mr. Johnson's candidacy, so long as it lasts at least, will keep the Southerners from bolting. On this premise, the preliminary draft of the civil rights plank, we're told, will stress federal government responsibility for school integration, for right to vote protection, and for job equality, and will pledge the Democratic candidate, if he's elected president, to pursue this federal approach. Civil rights, of course, is the big controversy. The committee also will cover many other issues on the platform in drafting its platform this year. Today, we'll hear from spokesmen of business and labor groups, educational organizations, such groups as Americans for Democratic Action. Now back to Edwin Newman.
There are activities at this convention and at every political convention that have nothing to do with politics and that also sometimes defy description. They range from special horse races to beauty contests to gourmet lunches to movie premieres to art exhibits. NBC's Lee Nichols reports.
The police department was one civic group that did not actively seek to attract the Democratic National Convention to Los Angeles. Police Commissioner John Ferraro would probably have been happy if it had gone up to San Francisco. But it did come, and the forces assigned 300 men to keep criminals from bothering the delegates, to keep the delegates from bothering the candidates, and vice versa. Los Angeles has the reputation of the cleanest big city in America. These men are out to defend that reputation. All plans for the giant welcome to Los Angeles, all the non-political convention arrangements, originated here with the California Convention Committee. Carolyn Lattimore is the girl who answers the phone and most of the questions. Thousands of California Democrats work out of this office, planning, organizing, and arranging. One of the big plans involves 263 Golden Girls. They're the official hostesses. They'll all be wearing these sailor hats, white two-piece dresses, white shoes, and purses shown here, all matching. But the purses do have names on them, so the girls won't get them mixed up. The organization of this work is fearsome. Hundreds of charts to plot, locations for the girls, timings coordinated with a dozen airline schedules, those in turn plotted against arrivals of delegates, candidates, and handlers. Goldie Kennedy has put this part of the show together. She's trying to hold it together until the delegates are all in town. Then her girls move on to the delegates' hotels, convention hall, and convention headquarters. One problem's come up already, how to keep the unofficial welcomers from doing the work of the Golden Girls. The Kennedy, Johnson, and Symington forces have been spiriting the delegates away. As yet, no unseemly struggle has gone on, such as the girls pulling one way, the partisans tugging the other, both saying, "Come with us." To add to the spell, hundreds of young Democrats are going to be speeding around the city, delivering something they call hospitality packs, filled with all manner of donated California products, including a bottle of sweet wine, nuts, and raisins. They'll put a pack in each delegate's room. To top off the fringe benefits of the Los Angeles Convention, the California Committee has prepared a giant fashion show. Designer Edith Small has two items in the show, a ball gown and a suit. The show's for the wives of the delegates who are coming out to this convention in unprecedented numbers. Wives of the presidential contenders are to be the special guests. The theme of the show, Los Angeles, gateway to Latin America. Barbara Trister's in charge. She'll handle the commentary for the show, which will be the first display of the 1960 fall and winter fashions, with some $50,000 worth of clothes. It will also unveil the 1961 swimsuit collection from two of California's top houses, these from Rosemary Reed, this one called Tiger. Over at Kohl of California, their showrooms, we turned up this two-piece item and a bikini, which has two pieces also. The show was designed for women, but they'd better plan on a piece of vital political business elsewhere, or the International Ballroom out in Beverly Hills is going to be filled with a lot of men who came out to Los Angeles for more serious business.
Well, that more serious business is the business of cornering and hogtying delegates, and it's increasing in pace at this hour. One of the camps most active today is the Symington camp, the camp of Senator Stuart Symington of Missouri, which is trying to prevent a Kennedy stampede. We'll talk to the director of the Symington campaign in just a moment.
The Democratic Convention opens next Monday in Los Angeles, and NBC Radio will be there to give you complete, meaningful coverage. The regularly scheduled convention meetings will be broadcast daily from beginning right through to the end, no matter what the hour. Also, each day before the delegates convene, we may take the air any time to keep you up to the minute on important developments. You'll hear the political sounds of the 60s when the Democratic Convention begins Monday on this NBC station.
And here again is NBC News correspondent Edwin Newman.
Senator Stuart Symington of Missouri was one of those who announced his candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination at an early date. He has the support of former President Harry Truman, who has stirred things up with his charge that the Kennedy forces were rigging the convention. Stuart Symington, who has ignored the presidential primaries, is not the front runner. But he's not out of the race either. He is still pounding around the track. His campaign manager is Representative Charles Brown of Missouri, who talks now with NBC's Richard Harkness.
Mr. Brown, I'm sure that you know and are aware of Governor Collins' statement today that he will let delegates shift their vote in the first ballot at the end of the first ballot unless that rule's changed. What's the reaction to that in the Symington headquarters?
Well, I just had a talk with Governor Collins, and I think he clarified what he said on Meet the Press last Sunday.
I see.
You'll remember that he left the impression that he was going to establish a policy about switching at the end of the first ballot, or at any ballot.
Yes.
And I think that he's going to establish that policy. But I suggested that he consider asking the Rules Committee for a change that would prevent any switching. For this reason, I think that the presidency is too important a post to be decided in a moment of hysterical frenzy, a moment of emotion. And the second thing, I think that there's a big difference in the convention rules and those of the rules we have in the House of Representatives.
Yes, there are.
You know, we don't have any electric tote boards in the House of Representatives.
Right.
So actually, at the convention, there is a final tabulation before the chairman actually announces the result. So it gives a vastly different setup than the House has.
Did Governor Collins say that he would consult with the Rules Committee?
No, he said he would not. He said that it was up to the Rules Committee if they wanted to propose a change.
Well, now, you favor a change as the Symington spokesman here. Have you thought of or have you already talked to the spokesman for Senator Johnson, for Governor Stevenson about this, Charlie?
No, I haven't talked with them. I plan to talk with some of the convention people, you know, some of our key Democrats, to get their feelings. I felt ever since 1956 that we should consider a rule change because of the unjustified criticism that Mr. Sam got in
yes.
that vice presidential melee.
That. Well, now, if you do try to get this rules change, Mr. Brown, and get the other candidates interested in it, isn't this the possible springboard for a so-called Stop Kennedy movement?
Not at all. You see, a rule change such as that could affect our chances, too, on a later ballot. We could reach a situation where a few critical switches could be most important. I think the thing to keep in mind is whether the rules should be changed or not, whether it's actually fair to all concerned, and whether it's right to nominate a president of the United States in a moment of frenzy. That's the only question, not how it would affect the candidates.
Well, now, if Senator Symington does become the nominee of this convention for president, won't there have to be a Stop Kennedy movement someplace pretty early?
Well, or Kennedy would have to stop himself, and Johnson have to stop himself. Let's put it that way.
Well, I don't think you're going to get much help from them on that score.
Well, but you know, sometimes that's beyond their control. Sometimes you just hit a stone wall, and there isn't anything you can do about it. We feel that the key people at this convention are the Symington delegates and the Stevenson delegates. Actually, they have within their grasp some 300 votes that if neither of the front runners gets, why, this convention could be tied up for two ballots, and then it would be a Symington versus Stevenson race.
Charlie, you're an old hand at these conventions. You know this is the period of claims. Now, the Kennedy people are claiming, I believe, 724. The Johnson people, 502 on the first ballot. So here's your chance for Symington.
Actually, if you take some of these claims, Dick, as you know, it's sort of like the time that Abraham
Lincoln... I asked about your claims, Charlie.
All right. Our claims, our worksheets show that we should have anywhere from 125 to 150 votes on the first ballot. When the favorite sons break up, that could go over to 200, maybe 250. We think that Stevenson will have approximately 50 on the first ballot, and that could go up to 100 on the second ballot. So those 300 to 350 votes, those 600 solid delegates standing firm, could be the key to this convention.
I see. The mathematics go a little fast for me out here in Los Angeles. I must be...
I live with those figures every day.
Charlie, I've seen you referred to this Democratic convention as likely to be a Donnybrook.
That's right.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that the battle royal between Senator Kennedy and Senator Johnson is really just that, a battle royal. And, you know, Democrats love a good fight.
Yes, they
and
do.
First thing you know, why, it could be a real Donnybrook. In such a situation, I think it's ideal for the underdogs, dark horses.
Wouldn't you say that one of Senator Symington's major backers, Harry S. Truman, the ex-president, started making this the Donnybrook?
Well, President Truman's quite a Democrat, you know, and a fighting Democrat. I think he got it in his head that the convention wasn't going just the way he wanted it to, and he spoke out about it. It was quite a surprise to us. We had no idea that he was going to do it.
Charlie Brown, what are your views on the rigging of this convention? Now, we've had that charge bandied about. It's a pretty high level.
I have no evidence myself of any rigging because we've been treated fairly. I will say this, though, that the stakes are so high and so important that we're watching everything, even who's going to keep that scoreboard on that electronic tote board. And if we feel we're getting any unfair treatment, don't worry, we'll speak out about it.
Charlie, when is Senator Symington, your candidate, arriving here in Los Angeles?
The plans are for him to arrive just shortly before noon on Saturday.
What will his schedule be? Are you...
Well, I think one of the first things he'll do will be to have a press conference.
Fine.
And get you men all briefed on just what the situation is. And then from then on, we'll be talking to delegates like mad, trying to convince them that the best way for this party to come on out on top in November is to nominate a man who can unite the party.
Charlie, I've heard now yesterday on this program, I interviewed the National Democratic Party chairman, Mr. Butler. He thought that it would be settled one way or another, this man win, the other man win by the third ballot. Do you
I've heard that opinion, and I just don't happen to share it. I think that I have about as good a tabulation of these delegates as anyone out here because we talk with them constantly, and we check their feelings with friends and neighbors. And I just don't see an early ballot victory at this time. Now, there could be a surprise. Anything can happen at a Democratic convention, and sometimes generally
probably
does.
Will. Well, you're talking then in terms of a deadlock, right?
I'm talking in terms of neither of the front runners getting a majority on the first two ballots.
What would you consider a deadlock? How many ballots would it have to go before you think that the convention was really locked up?
Well, I think that if neither of the front runners makes it on the first two ballots, then the other front runner would take his run at it on the third, and if he falls short, then sometime after that, we'll nominate Symington.
Sometime after that? You don't want to make a prediction of when?
No, but I don't see it going into one of those 104 ballot deals or one of those 12 or 15 ballot deals. It'll be sometime after the third ballot.
Charlie, can you see a coalition of the Symington supporters with anybody else, say the Stevenson supporters?
You know, coalitions are just words dreamed up by newspaper men, I think, in politics, because actually, there's no way for any of these candidates to transfer any substantial amount of his strength to another candidate. The feelings, the opinions of Democrats are pretty strong, and each has his favorite. And if someone likes this man, he might like him because he doesn't like anybody else, so he'll stick with that man. I think in our own case, for instance, the speculation about where would the Symington people switch, you know, if they switch, that's sheer hogwash, because why would they switch? We've known all along that we don't have a chance on the first two ballots. We're looking for beyond the third, so we'll just stay in there. We'll be switching to anyone.
We'll just stay in there, and we'll be reporting the story. Now, Ed Newman, back to you.
Again today, NBC newsmen have been up and down the corridors of the Biltmore Hotel ferreting out the latest developments in this pre-convention week. With us now are Herb Kaplow, Sandra Van Oker, Bill Henry, and Frank Burgholzer. Let's start with Sandy Van Oker. Sandy, there's been an awful lot of talk today about the key position occupied by Governor Pat Brown of California with his big delegation. What do you hear about that?
Well, Ed, California politics are about the richest and most complex I know outside the Balkans. And all I know today is that Governor Brown, there's no secret about this, has been leaning toward Senator Kennedy for quite some time. This is public knowledge. Now, he is ready to go for an endorsement of Kennedy. It's a question of when. It could come tomorrow. It could come Friday. He has this problem. He may want to wait until Sunday, till the California delegation meets in a caucus. And he may want to then make the announcement, because his problem out here is that this is the only state in the country where Stevenson is probably stronger than Kennedy. And I would say at this point, there are probably about 50 votes for Kennedy in California if Brown goes with Kennedy. But there is a large block of Stevenson support here. And after all, after the convention is passed, after the election is over, he's still got to live with these Stevenson people who are rich, they're vigorous, and they work in the party, so he has a real problem here.
I wonder whether Bill Henry, who is a Californian, agrees with you.
Well, we have a wild and rugged state here, and I am inclined to agree pretty closely with Sandy as to the unpredictability of the California delegation. I don't know where they're going to go. I have a suspicion that some people high in the administration in the state of California would like to swing them in a certain direction, but whether he can do it or not, I'm inclined to agree with Mr. Brown of the Symington camp that it's a little difficult to swing people against their will.
Bill, what do you hear about Hubert Humphrey? Can he play any important part when he gets in?
Well, I don't hear very much about Hubert Humphrey, but I think that a lot of people are thinking about him. Hubert Humphrey is a man who I think can have a greater personal influence through his own appearance than any other Democrat. I think anybody that saw Hubert Humphrey in 1948 and saw him swing the sentiment toward something that he had in mind in the platform, will realize there's one fellow that might get up and kind of stampede a convention. And I should say that if Humphrey, for some reason or other, should appear and should make one of those fighting, sensational speeches of his, that almost anyone who received the presidential nomination, I'd be quite interested in having Hubert Humphrey as a running mate purely on the strength of his personal ability to rouse people and get them going.
What about the question of where Humphrey might throw his support for a presidential nominee?
Well, there's been talk about a Humphrey-Kennedy deal. I don't believe this. I don't think Kennedy has made any deals with anyone. I think he's probably going in this thing cleaner than anybody in a long time. But there is this talk of Humphrey for a vice president, but he has a problem because he's going to run again for the Senate this year, and if he loses when he runs for the vice president, he's just out of public life. He may become the Democratic Harold Stassen. And then there's also Orville Freeman, who's being touted as a vice presidential candidate. He would probably, I would say now, go toward Kennedy because Kennedy's support has been building up in Minnesota ever since Humphrey withdrew after West Virginia. There's Symington support there too, though.
Isn't that Humphrey going to see former President Truman on his way out here?
There's a possibility. There's a possibility.
Well, there's another possible kingmaker here in the Democratic Convention, and that's David Lawrence of Pittsburgh. What do you hear about him, Herb?
Well, Dave Lawrence, like Governor Pat Brown of California, has 81 votes to dole out at this convention. But unlike Brown, is not even leaning as much as Brown might be considered to lean toward any candidate. He's playing it probably most uncommitted of anybody in this thing. He has been known to speak favorably of Adlai Stevenson. I think perhaps the other side of this coin is, while Lawrence himself is a Catholic, he is very wary and has some apprehension about a Catholic running as a presidential nominee. He had his own gubernatorial experience recently, I guess 2 years ago, when he expected to win the state by something like 250 or 275,000 and won it by 75,000, which scared him. He attributed it to the religious issue, largely because he showed up poorest in the, well, what would be considered Pennsylvania's Bible Belt. Now, with respect to that, there's also a local situation in Pennsylvania, as in some other states. They are trying to win control of both houses of the legislature, especially in this here, because of the census and the redistricting, and they don't want to be gerrymandered out of some good Democratic districts. The possibility of a Catholic presidential candidate might drag them down. But he is caucusing, I think, Sunday out in Pasadena, and I noticed last night Governor Brown invited Senator Symington, Senator Kennedy, Senator Johnson, and I think Senator Monroney or somebody else for Stevenson to come and appear at a fashion show.
Governor Lawrence invited them to address the Pennsylvania delegation. Frank Burgos, so what about the Rules Committee development today with Governor Collins? How would you expect that to affect things here?
Well, Governor Collins went around talking to the various delegations, as Mr. Brown indicated, and said very definitely that he does not want to recommend anything to the Rules Committee, one way or the other, as to whether a new rule should be brought in prohibiting the any delegation from switching its votes after its votes have already once been counted. But one point that I think we might make is that Governor Collins also has said quite definitely that he is convinced that as chairman, he will be able to control the convention and not permit Mr. Brown of the Symington camp called a frenzied choice, that Governor Collins thinks he can, by the last minute announcement of a policy on these vote switches, that he can control the convention and make it a fair arrangement and not one that would throw favor to one candidate or another.
Frank, may I? Frank, don't you have the feeling in talking to Collins and talking to people around here today that Collins is rather enjoying building up a bit of suspense as to what he will do?
I don't think
he's
having
a grand time.
Do you really think so? I think he's worried silly about being on the hot seat.
Well, you can look at it either way, but when I've talked to him, he seemed to be enjoying himself quite immensely and enjoying The prospect of having a spotlight on him that he is confident he can handle and make himself look good in that spotlight.
Very, very briefly, he is enjoying having a series of agonizing reappraisals. could I get a very quick answer from you, Bill Henry, on this? Do you consider that the age issue in this election is finished?
I think the age issue has always been finished, but I think they're still going to be talking about experience. That's not quite the same thing.
Bill, I asked you that question because I wanted to defer to age. Adlai Stevenson and President Eisenhower both appeared to dismiss age as a factor today.
We have no new diseases today either.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. The Democratic Convention is now 4 days off. You cannot say that nothing is happening. Something is happening, but it's mostly skirmishing. The big men have not arrived yet. They're still warming up in their dressing rooms. Now, this is very disappointing for the tourists who are here. Enter the headquarters hotel, the Biltmore, and you'll see dozens of people sitting and standing around the lobby. They are looking for celebrities. They're seeing mostly newsmen. They're also, as it happens, seeing many important politicians. This man's campaign manager, that candidate's public relations man, the head of this or that convention committee. The trouble is, the tourists don't recognize them. These are the men behind the scenes, and when you bring them out in the front, nobody knows who they are. One familiar face that all the tourists would know is going to be missing from this convention, and his absence shows what a precarious business American politics can be. That familiar face belongs to Senator Estes Kefauver of Tennessee. 8 years ago, Kefauver went into the convention definitely in contention for the nomination and took Adlai Stevenson to stop him. 4 years ago, Kefauver won the vice presidential nomination over Senator Kennedy. Well, this year, the man in the coonskin cap is a delegate, but he won't be here. He has announced in Dover, Tennessee, that he plans to spend his time campaigning for renomination. He faces a primary contest in August, and it's going to be a tough one. The centers of power have shifted in the Democratic Party. A Kefauver-less and possibly Harry Truman-less convention is coming up. Adlai Stevenson could bring back the past by getting the nomination, but he can do that only if the new, younger men kill each other off. In short, the old order changes. Edwin Newman, NBC News, reporting from Los Angeles.
NBC Radio has brought you a special convention preview report. The Democratic Convention opens in Los Angeles, Monday, July 11th. And NBC Radio will be there daily to give you complete, meaningful coverage. Listening at home, in your car, or on your portable, you'll be able to follow the minute-by-minute happenings better than if you were in the convention hall itself. You'll hear it all, the nominating speeches, the balloting, the color, and the excitement of the political sounds of the 60s, all on NBC Radio. Remember, NBC Radio for the Democratic National Convention, opening in Los Angeles, Monday, July 11th. Full NBC coverage on NBC Radio.